Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an update on the voter suppression activities of Republican governors and legislatures that the Department of Justice is finally pushing back against. Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, joins us to discuss efforts underway to re-enfranchise 5 million eligible voters who have been denied their vote by new Republican laws intended to prevent likely Democratic voters from going to the polls in November. Then we will go to Europe to discuss an emergency meeting of the G7 finance ministers taking place on Tuesday to stop a run on the Spanish banks, which has heightened global concerns about Eurozone debt in the already strained 17-nation European currency arrangement. Amy Verdun, the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Victoria in Canada and co-editor of the Journal of Common Market Studies, joins us to assess whether this latest crisis meeting will finally address the two-year-long ongoing crisis. Then finally, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author Chris Hedges joins us to discuss his latest book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. This graphic novel is a searing account of the travels of Hedges and cartoonist Joe Sacco through America's sacrifice zones, where our poorest, most exploited citizens are victims of the unchecked depredations of big business in a contemporary oligarchic system of masters and serfs. And joining us now is Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law, where she founded and directed the center's Voting Rights and Election Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. She's authored a number of nationally recognized publications and articles on voting rights and election reform, litigated groundbreaking voting rights lawsuits, testified before both houses of Congress in a variety of state legislatures, and provided policy and legislative drafting assistance to federal and state legislators with administrators across the country. Welcome to Background Briefing, Wendy Weiser.
Thank you for having me.
And where do we stand in terms of your center, the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law? Initially, some time back, said that about 5 million people were being scrubbed off the election list, eligible voters who were being denied the vote in this election cycle. It looks finally as though the Justice Department has acted. There's been some questions about their torpor there, but now they seem to be acting. But there's also some defiance being shown. Let's start with Florida, with Governor Rick Scott defying the federal warning to stop purging people. Where does that stand?
Well, Florida is one of the states that not only have passed restrictive voting laws, but has now taken a very radical step in trying to do a massive purge of the voter rolls in a short period of time right before an election. It has created lists of tens of thousands of people and claimed that they are people who should be removed from the voter rolls. Preliminary investigations are suggesting that a huge number of those people are, in fact, eligible Florida citizens and should still stay on the voter rolls. The Department of Justice stepped in and said, hey, wait a second, you can't do this in Florida. In Florida, you need to actually get federal approval before you move forward with a new kind of purge process like this. Florida is one of the states that are covered by the Federal Voting Rights Act and need federal approval. The Department of Justice also said that this purge, even if you got federal approval, would violate the federal motor voter law, because that law actually protects against these kind of last-minute efforts to clean up the voter roll. Congress recognized that people make lots of mistakes in the period right before the elections, and if you want to do a massive purge of the voter rolls, you need to do it a little bit earlier when there's enough time to get it right. So that is what the Department of Justice did. Governor Scott came back and said, you know, we're not stopping this. But there's good news for Florida. The supervisors of elections, the people who are actually at the front lines and who would actually be the ones who would be removing the names from the voter rolls, said, you know, we're not moving forward right now with this purge. We're not actually going to delete these names from the voter rolls. We're listening to what the Department of Justice said. They are actually pushing back. So we're seeing a really unusual battle in the state between the chief executive and the those who actually run the elections day to day. It's a really unusual and remarkable set of events.
And what's happening in Alabama, where the Alabama is challenging the Department of Justice over voting rights law?
You know, there's actually a whole bunch of states who, and Alabama was the first, to file lawsuits saying, You know, we don't like the Voting Rights Act. This was the premier civil rights law, the most successful piece of civil rights legislation in our nation's history. It's been largely credited with ushering in an era of much greater political equality on the basis of race in our country. This is the law that Martin Luther King and others like John Lewis marched for, and was just recently reauthorized by overwhelming bipartisan majorities of Congress and signed into law by George W. Bush back in 2006. And just over the past 2 years, we've seen a number of states saying, we don't want this law, we think the court should strike it down. So it's been a remarkable turnaround, and Shelby County, Alabama, one of the jurisdictions that are covered by the law, its case was the first one decided by a federal court. It was a 3-judge panel out of D.C., and that court roundly rejected the challenge. It said this is actually good law. Congress has no doubt has the power to enact this law. Congress has the power under the Constitution to actually protect against race discrimination in voting, and this is a reasonable attempt to do so, and to target the places where there's been a history, a real documented and ongoing history of racial discrimination in voting.
Again, I'm speaking with Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law, where she founded and directed the center's Voting Rights and Election Project. And across the country, of course, in various states where we've had, in 2010, Republican governors took over and Republicans captured the legislatures, there's been a pattern of laws that have been enacted, and much of it has been apparently drafted by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, who have drafted these model laws. Of course, they got a lot of publicity in Florida over the shooting of Trayvon Martin at the Stand Your Ground law. But these voter suppression or these new draconian rules that have come in are also part of ALEC, along with privatization of education that's taken place in Louisiana. So on many, many fronts, it seems that ALEC and the Republicans are active. What can the Democrats do, though? One would think that moral suasion would be something in a democracy that it's just unacceptable to disenfranchise people. But I guess that's not working. Is there anything else that can work here in ahead of this election to get these 5 million people back on the rolls?
Actually, the moral suasion and the pushback is actually starting to bear fruit. Where round one went to the vote suppressors, and we did see the most significant wave of laws cutting back on voting, making it harder for eligible American citizens to vote than we've seen in decades since the Jim Crow era. 23 laws and 2 executive actions in 18 states. And that's a huge wave over the past 2 years. But we are now seeing a very successful pushback. Just on Thursday evening, for example, a federal court just struck down Florida's attempt to hobble voter registration drives with severe and onerous regulations that may essentially shut down voter registration drives across the state, caused the League of Women Voters, for example, to impose a statewide moratorium on voter registration efforts that it's been conducting for more than 70 years. And a federal court said it blocked that. It said this violates the Constitution. This violates our most cherished rights to speak and associate and promote voting among our fellow citizens. And so that's one significant victory. But in fact, every single court to have looked at any of these laws in this wave of restrictive laws this year has found them lacking. This is not a legitimate wave of laws to regulate the voting process. You know, this is vote suppression, and the courts are pushing back. And these courts are at the federal level, at the state level, Republican appointees, Democratic appointees. It's a real across-the-board pushback in the courts and in the Department of Justice. And we've even seen voters push back in some states, and states like Maine and Ohio that have a citizen initiative process. Voters have actually pushed back against these laws that are restricting voting and overturned them. So we're actually seeing round two going to voters. The voters are really gaining ground, and hopefully by the time the election rolls around, far fewer of these restrictions will be in place, and voters will actually be able to participate free from these serious and unnecessary burdens.
Well, of course, the U.S., Wendy White, is somewhat unique amongst the democracies of having so many impediments, particularly registration and different rules in every state. And this has discouraged a lot of people, and the young in particular don't seem to be difficult to motivate in the first place to vote. And if it's not made easy, they tend not to vote, and that's why Motor Voter and these other efforts to make it simple and easy, and in Maine they had same-day registration and voting. I understand that that's how they've the voter suppressors have been at work in this country, is to, you know, make the registration process less easy. I mean, frankly, I don't even understand why it's there in the first place, having seen elections in other democracies, but that's, I guess, another discussion.
Yeah, well, it is true that a significant portion of these new restrictions are making voter registration harder. And the more hoops you put in front of people, the less likely they are to vote and participate. And that's been true for decades. And in fact, historically, any time that there's been a real pushback against voting rights and attempt to suppress votes, it's always started with a more onerous voter registration regulations. And so that's why we really need to focus on actually improving our voter registration system. And this is the 21st century. We should not be operating with a paper-based system that gives people the discretion to do what Florida just attempted to do, to sort of selectively knock people off the voter rolls, that actually create all these crazy hurdles and lead to rolls that are riddled with errors. I mean, Pew Center in the States found that the voter rolls are actually dramatically incomplete. They did a recent study, they found that more than a quarter of eligible Americans are not on the voter rolls, and that even those people that are on the voter rolls, there are mistakes on their records. 1 in 8 records have serious errors in them. They're just completely inaccurate, and that's just not the kind of system we should have for the 21st century. This is actually an easily solvable problem. We could just modernize our voter registration system, and that's actually a real solution that everyone can get behind. And to get past these voting wars, it would reduce the opportunity for fraud. It would make our voter rolls more complete and accurate. It would really solve all the problems. And if we were really serious about improving our systems instead of excluding voters, that's what we'd be focused on.
Well, interesting enough, next door in Mexico, they have a universal voter ID that seems to work very well. And, we've always sort of considered many of the nations to the south to be conducting kind of banana republic democracies. But it's a little ironic, is it not, that Mexico's system is a lot more foolproof, tamper-proof, easy and user-friendly than ours.
Many countries actually have voter registration systems that work a whole lot better than ours. And many countries also work a whole lot better than the United States at actually getting IDs to all eligible citizens. I mean, that's a real problem here, is that we've been seeing a wave of voter identification laws that aren't reasonable voter ID laws that ask people for the kinds of IDs that they do have. They're very restrictive laws that limit the forms of acceptable IDs to IDs that 10% of the population just don't have. And they cherry pick. They say, we will accept a concealed handgun license, but we won't accept your student ID, even if it's state issued. So these are, we are seeing laws that, appear to be designed to exclude at least certain groups of voters, and there aren't real reasonable attempts to include everybody. And that's something that we don't see in other countries as much. And, in part because the election administration is, in other countries, freed from partisan influence in many other places.
So in terms of what can be done, though, to sort of smoke out those people who, I understand some of the voting suppressors use arguments like fraud, they're preventing fraud when there's statistically very little evidence of fraud. Is there a more robust way to have a kind of national referendum on people that really don't want Americans to vote and those that do? You would think it would kind of cross party lines. It would be sort of a mom and apple pie issue. But I'm just trying to figure a way here to, since moral suasion doesn't work, is there another mechanism that you've thought about? I mean, I know you work on this issue and you're fighting all these tiny little battles all the time, aren't you?
It is true, but I think this year it reached a threshold where people are getting up and taking notice and saying this is just too much. this is something fishy is going on here, and this is not legitimate. I think, you know, when it was a more scattershot effort, you know, it didn't reach people's radar screens in the same way. But now that it's, you know, been such a concerted effort and pushback against voters, and it's been making it harder for people to vote across the country, I think that, you know, there's a real opportunity, a moment for people to say, hey, you know, hey, wait a second, this isn't what American democracy is about. This is not what's supposed to happen. We're supposed to have fair rules of the game where everybody who's eligible gets to participate, and you don't win by knocking out your opponent's voters. You win by persuading them to vote for you. And so I do think that there's a real opportunity to push back. I also think that a lot of these laws actually violate fundamental American principles that are already embodied in federal law and in the U.S. Constitution and in our state constitutions, and that's why we're seeing the courts push back as well, saying, hey, wait a second, we already protect against this. This isn't something that also, you know, you can't really vote on who else gets to participate. You know, everybody who's an eligible citizen gets to participate, whether you like it or not. That is a fundamental principle of American democracy, and that's embodied in our Constitution.
And even though our courts have moved considerably to the right, and particularly the Supreme Court, there's still enough fairness and objectivity in the legal system to render the right judgments?
You know, we certainly haven't lost all faith in the courts. In fact, the courts have been pushing back against these laws. You know, it remains to be seen how it's going to ultimately end up, but we have seen real pushback across the country from all sorts of courts. You know, the First Amendment, the right to vote, these are fundamental American constitutional principles. And I think it would be very hard-pressed a court to actually find that they don't matter and that they don't carry weight.
So just in closing, Wendy Weiser, there's a couple of key elections, of course, tomorrow, both here in California and in Wisconsin with a recall election. I understand that Department of Justice is actually sending monitors down there. So we've been having a conversation about trying to re-enfranchise people who've been systematically disenfranchised, who are eligible to vote in the general election and the primary elections. But we're not free from what happens after your vote, which is, you know, it's the old adage of Joseph Stalin's, it doesn't matter who votes, but who counts the vote. What do you know about why the Justice Department is sending a team down to check on this recall vote in Wisconsin?
You know, the Department of Justice is statutorily both authorized and obligated to send monitors across the country to places where, to jurisdictions where they think that there's a risk of violations of the, you know, voter rights under the Federal Voting Rights Act and under other civil rights laws. And so they are sending monitors, and they're authorized to look and see if their voters are going to be intimidated, if they're going to be improperly discriminated against the polls. And so that's what they're there to do. And that's something that they actually routinely do. They do this in a variety of elections. They don't have enough staff to cover every single election, but they do notify the public when they go and cover an election. And it adds an extra layer of protection on the ground and against efforts to intimidate and otherwise knock out unfairly voters.
So that's not to suggest that, because we know from the polling that it's going to be a very tight race, the recall race in Wisconsin, it's not to suggest that the vote count won't be accurate and transparent.
They are not there to monitor the vote count. They are there to monitor the polls and make sure that the voters' civil rights are not being interfered with. The counting of the votes is not something that they have anything to do with. The Department of Justice is not involved in that at all. That's a state function. We haven't heard any reason to worry that there's going to be any impropriety in the vote count in Wisconsin.
Well,
and
I think
they're not there to monitor the vote count. They're there to monitor the polls and make sure that voters are fairly treated under federal law.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Wendy Weiser.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directed the center's Voting Rights and Elections Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. She's authored a number of nationally recognized publications and articles on voting rights and election reform, litigated groundbreaking voting rights lawsuits, testified before both houses of Congress and in a variety of state legislatures, and provided policy and legislative legislative drafting assistance to federal and state legislators and administrators across the country. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back and go to Europe to talk about the G7 finance ministers' emergency meeting. All that dying and dust, blowing up your hopes, flamboyant obstacles, oh, deals made to cope, ideas in decline, rise of the loss, yeah, 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 hey, here we stand, slave to networks, master plans, swags the brand, open a can, chains off still, y'all never ran, but do you think you